Hey, it's me, Richie T here. Want to let you know something very exciting is going on. You remember Peter Breinholt? You know, you can't lose Articles of News, episode 6 here of the Cultural Hall. Well, guess what? He's going to be playing at Layton High School's auditorium on the 23rd of March at 7 p.m., and it's a fundraiser for the Whitesides Elementary School Music and Arts Program and their Shakespeare Program. Tickets are only $3 cash or credit card and can be purchased at Whitesides Elementary School, or you can get them online at whitesidespta.com, or you can give them a call at 801-402-3600. Go to this. It's going to be a great time. It's Peter Breinholt. You love him. You love Peter Breinholt. You know, Peter Breinholt. And what about, you know, Peter Breinholt? Go to this March 23rd, 7 p.m. It's Layton High School here in Utah. All right, let's get to the episode. You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel!
The anticipation is killing you, isn't it? It's episode 30 of the Cultural Hall. I always do a countdown, and I always go 3, 2, 1, and then I immediately start. In fact, most times I start way before I've given a break between 1 and... That's right, it's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. And on that one, I did 3, 2, 1.
And I was holding my breath.
Yeah, because you don't want to go right at the start of it like you've done one time that I can remember.
I did.
And so I'm just waiting. She turned blue and then passed out, and I decided to go ahead and start the episode. It is the Cultural Hall. It's me, Richie T.
And I'm Ashley Garvey Smith.
And I. Hey, it's episode 30 of the Cultural Hall. Coming up, we've got Joe Anderson, who is the author of the book, How Can You Possibly Be a Democrat and a Mormon?
How can you possibly be a Mormon
and a Democrat?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Same, yeah.
Sort of the same thing.
Not really the same thing. You're right. How can you possibly be a Mormon and a Democrat?
Right.
And so we'll visit him with him all about his book in the second and third blocks. Let's talk a little bit about how that goes.
Okay.
So as we demonstrated with the Michael B. episode a couple episodes back, one of the things that I said in the kind of introduction to that episode is that we don't ever want to censor the Cultural Hall.
Right.
It's not a place where, you know, with that whole episode, and I guess we can dive into it a little further, this speaking about the Michael B. episode, I didn't feel the need to edit it. One, because I didn't think that it was terribly profane.
No.
And certainly not anything that we haven't heard, but I also wanted to make sure that everyone feels like when you listen to the Cultural Hall that you're getting the whole story, that we're not taking stuff out or that we're not making you feel one way or another.
Right. It's just real. We're just real.
Yeah, it's just organic. It's just happening right now. Look at this pen. I just threw a pen against the wall, right?
You did. You really did.
I'm not going to take that out. I just literally threw a pen against the wall.
I was a little bit afraid for my life.
Yeah, it was coming for you, and then I decided the wall might be better. But, you know, we get approached by different people saying, hey, you know what? This might be a good subject for the Cultural Hall.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think about every suggestion that comes, you know, my way, especially because I'm kind of the one who puts the guests together, is I don't think that there's ever a bad guest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there may be a better time. You know, we don't want to do similarly themed guests back to back to back to back to back.
Right.
Or we don't want to do the same type of guest all the time.
Yeah.
But every suggestion that I've ever received, I've kind of kept on going, oh, yeah, you know what? That would be good. I don't think that it fits right now necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, let's hang on to whoever that person might be.
Yeah.
Like, for example, one that I have planned out to be episode 50 is I plan to have my mom here in the Cultural Hall.
Nice, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
and
so excited.
The reason being she is not only no longer a member of the church, mm-hmm. but hates the church quite a bit.
Really?
And so I want to get her in, and I in some ways have never really talked to her about kind of that transformation of where it was when she was younger to then, you know, being married in the temple to my dad, and they got divorced, and then her kind of transformation into having her name removed, and then from there to just become kind of embittered towards the church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that I didn't want to do that too far or too soon in the Cultural Hall.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's episodes like that that are coming up. But Joe Anderson, the one that we're doing today, to give you kind of a heads up, Joe came to us by way of Mitch Main, which if you haven't listened to the Cultural Hall before, this may be your first episode. He is episode number 13 and number 14.
Right.
And he is a guy that is in the Bishop Brick out in San Francisco. The Bay Ward in San Francisco. That's what I was trying to remember. And he's executive secretary. He's openly gay. He doesn't practice homosexuality at this point, but he is openly gay. Had a partner for several years. They broke up. He was then able to remain chaste and was able to receive this calling. And we had that whole conversation with him. It was so good and so long that we ended up breaking it up into two episodes.
Still,
and it's actually the most popular.
Yeah. As a listener, my two favorite episodes.
Number 13 and number 14. So check that out. I think the only place you can get that now is by going to iTunes and subscribing for the Cultural Hall and then going back. And there's a lot of other great episodes in there too. Number 3 and number 2 with Kirby Hayborn and Jenna Kim Jones are both really great episodes that I enjoy. Peter Breinholt was a lot of fun.
Number 17 with Tom Worth
and the Full,
the Full
Circle.
That's my own band, and I can't even say the name.
Yeah. We may want to change the name of my own band. That's where I first met Ashley Garby Smith, and what brings her partially here today, doing this with me. So, you know, a lot of great episodes. If you haven't gone back and listened to them, do. And then if you listen to all of them, we can call you a lifer. Otherwise, you're just a convert.
Yes.
But Joe Anderson came to us by way of Mitch Main, and to be truthful, I saw the name of the book. Said, how can you possibly be a Mormon and a Democrat? And I said, all right, sure. That makes sense. In Utah especially, there's a lot of talk about, with the Utah Democratic Party talking about, you know, the Mormons, you know, is kind of shy away, or what are you teaching from the pulpit so that people don't feel like they can be Democrats and be Mormon.
Right.
And so we wanted to invite him in. On the day of the interview, I woke him up.
But yeah, when we were waiting to interview him.
Yeah, I gave him a call and I actually woke him up. So so it's a little scrambled, and I think that he was a little bit, I don't know if I would say taken off guard, but certainly, you know that feeling when you just...
Cobwebs. This is what I call it, cobwebs in your head.
Yeah.
And you wake up from a long sleep or a nap, and you've got total cobwebs, and sometimes they don't go away for a really long time.
Yeah. So we still wanted to share this with you. We didn't want to keep it from you, but that'll be coming up in the second and third block. That is the episode or the interview here with Joe Anderson. How can you possibly be a Mormon and a Democrat? So there's the introduction for that. Stick around for that, though. It's kind of fun. In its randomness, it is so all over the place.
It's very random.
And hope that you'll stick around and listen to all that. So I have a couple of other things. I received an email that says the following. Hey, Richie, I heard about the Cultural Hall podcast months ago. But as with everything in my life, it took me a while to actually get on the bandwagon and listen to them.
Okay.
I really enjoy what you're doing. Whether or not every listener agrees with that week's subject matter, I find that it is something that needs to be discussed to hopefully make Mormons more tolerant and accepting of other people, even if they don't agree. Isn't that the idea, that we be more Christ-like? I download the podcast and I listen to them at work, and I find myself laughing out loud at times, soul-searching on others, and really taking to heart the guests' information that they are sharing with us. It has definitely helped me and my transition back to the church after being inactive for 15 years.
Wow.
I'm currently on episode 20. This is the one where you announced that Lauren is no longer a part of the show due to a difference in ideas. You talked about how you would like to have some regular contributors or rotate, etc. With that being said, I'd like to pimp myself for a possible contributing spot.
Pimp? Where you can use pimp, right?
Yeah, no, well, we prefer using the term climb up on the Ramy-umptum and speak about yourself.
Right.
So she says, this is Jen is her name.
Okay.
A little background is that I was born and raised Mormon, baptized, but stopped going when I was about 15 or 16 years old and really contemplated at removing my name at the age of 18 after a church leader said something negative about me to other teens in Mutual because of a choice that I had decided to make. During my inactivity, I drank, lived with my boyfriends, had tattoos, did not obey the law of chastity, and ended up being pregnant at 23. I decided to keep my child knowing that she would never meet her father and it would be all me forever. I got a good job, worked my way up in the company, and after 7.5 years, I lost my job. That was 8 months ago, and since then I've gone back to church, had missionaries come give my daughter and I the discussions to help integrate me back into the church and prepare her for baptism, received 2 callings in my family ward, found a new job, got my patriarchal blessing a few months ago, and decided to go back to school and get a degree. I haven't been this happy in a long time, and what I thought was happiness back then really wasn't. She says, I think I can help give insight to fellow listeners regarding the trials that they may face, raising a child or children alone with no significant other, dealing with exes and children. 50% of my family, extended family, and friends are dealing with them. The ridiculousness of trying to find a mate, being that I am over 22, being of the world for so long, then learning how to be in the world, leaving my old ways behind, and having my daughter be baptized. I've gone through a lot, seen a lot, done a lot, and I think that I can give an insight that has yet to be brought to the cultural hall. If not, I can at least give good travel destination insight since I've been in the travel hospitality industry for 8 years.
Oh, great.
So just a thought, if you're not interested, I understand. Keep up the good work, says Jen.
Well, thanks, Jen.
So, yeah, I plan on having her in.
Great.
I mean, that's something that's coming up as well.
Yeah.
When we originally set out to do, I guess in my mind, when I originally set out to do the cultural hall, the thought was, you know, I want to do famous or famed Mormons. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed is exactly what Jen is talking about, mm-hmm. where it's an outreach to more than just, you know, these famous people. It's people of maybe a certain situation or certain life circumstances, mm-hmm. or, you know, also one of the ones that I've received the most comments, the episode that I've received the most comments about, and it was just kind of a thrown together thing at the last minute, was episode 7, which was about online dating.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh yeah, I love that you guys had the input and had different people who had tried online dating and all this stuff. And to be truthful, that was crap, the guest canceled. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Okay, you online date. Let's get one other person in. And then we talked about it.
Yeah.
And so I really like that as an idea of a topic of returning from inactivity to activity. So I'm calling out. I want to do that episode. And I want to get a male perspective as well. So if you are an inactive male person who has come back. So I guess an active but was inactive for a good amount of time. And it's fairly recent in your life. We would invite you to go to theculturalhall.com, go to contact us, and then let us know a little bit about your story so we can plan that in the future. But I thought
awesome.
That seemed pretty awesome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I love that idea.
Right?
Well, and I've been surprised, with our Facebook post, how many people say that they are not active in the church, but they still listen to the podcast and they still contribute to our Facebook page and tweet with us and all that stuff.
It's not just for active members of the church.
Yeah.
Please. So if you have someone that maybe, you know, doesn't know anything about the Mormon culture, share it with them. If it's someone, you know, another thing that I think would be funny, and I don't know that anyone would be willing to do this, but I may try, someone that, you know, just kind of is like, I'm kind of about the church. Just be like, hey, I got this podcast. I know that you've been born and raised in the church and that you don't want to have anything to do with it, but listen to what these guys are doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Offer it up.
I like it.
It could count as a home teaching
message,
right?
It's like a missionary
experience. Or a visiting teaching message.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
sure. It could.
I agree.
If you bring some brownies with
well,
it.
Well, yeah, either do brownies or... Well, do you know that like a Facebook message or a text is actually counted as visiting teaching?
Yeah, visiting teaching.
Not home teaching.
You think that's the double standard?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. I understand why they do it that way.
Why do they? Because I don't know that I do.
Well, because I think home teaching... You're trying to bring the priesthood into people's homes.
Uh-huh.
And I think visiting teaching is a little bit different goal.
What is it?
I think, well, I've
for
got
you,
my own.
For you.
For me. My personal feelings about visiting teaching is that you are trying to befriend your sisters. And uh-huh. you're trying to basically, you know, not necessarily bring them into the fold because a lot of them are already there. But
sure.
I think there are just a lot of women who just need that... you know, companionship of the other sisters in the ward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think home teaching is a little bit different because you've got priesthood leaders that are going into other people's homes. And there are some people that, you know, need like priesthood blessings and things like that. That's not something that the visiting teaching program can provide.
Yeah. Or should provide either.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
We're not really supposed to
don't do that.
But you're in luck, pal.
Since we're here.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I just think visiting teaching, you know, you can send a Facebook message and text, and it's not counted as a visit. It's counted as a text or a message, but at least you're checking up on your sisters, making sure they're all.
Do they have to respond back in order for it to count?
Not necessarily, no, because there are some that just don't. I mean, there are some.
You ever had anyone like that?
That don't respond back?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like people that just want nothing to do with the church that you're assigned to visiting teach?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
You know, I think that you just, unless they come to you and say, I absolutely, because we've had people that say, I do not want visiting teachers at all. So do not send the visiting teachers. And I think if that's the case, then you don't send them, like, don't keep knocking on their door and be like, let us in.
No, come on, we're here.
No, so I think, but if they never come to you and say, I think a lot of them like the fact that people are thinking of them. They just don't really want to let them in their house. They don't want a Mormon message. You know, they don't want a visiting teaching message. But I think it's good to let the sisters maybe that are inactive or you don't see very much know that you still care about them and you're still thinking about them.
And so you have people that are assigned to you. Assigned, I use that term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that nothing?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. See, so I'll like never any response. So, but
I think for me, I don't actually have any home teaching at this point, but I think for me that would be really hard just because I, and this is by no means a commentary on anyone. Like, I think I would just be so awkwardly persistent about it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm a little bit that way.
Where it'd be like, hey, I mowed your lawn. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I think I would start to become that guy. And it sort of makes me nervous in that kind of presumptuous kind of approach where it's like, of course they want this. No, of course they'll finally talk to me. But I kind of like the challenge of it too.
I've left goodies on doorsteps before, and I'll like drive by a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Goodies no longer on the doorsteps. They don't say anything, but I know they appreciate those goodies.
There's just wiped napkins.
Yeah.
Thanks, pal.
So, yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If they don't come and tell you they don't want visiting teachers, because they know who to tell if they don't want their visiting teachers to come.
Or you'd think anyway.
Right.
Do you have any guilt about it?
Nope. Do I have any guilt about, like, being
like
persistent?
Not being able to get him. Not being able to talk to him.
No, if I try, I do not feel guilty about it. If I genuinely make an effort, I don't feel guilty.
It's interesting. So I'm kind of a nerd about older church stuff. And one of the things that I found in my grandpa's, he used to keep everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like a pack rat. Like, everything was organized.
Yeah.
Like, extremely organized. So, like, he had taxes from 57 and 1958 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you'd just be able to be like, oh, in that year he paid this much in this year. And one of the things that he had was this big book of, like, church pamphlets and just all sorts of old church, I guess, paraphernalia.
Sure.
And one of the things that was in there is this book of home teaching. And I didn't know that they did this back in the day, but there used to be, and it was probably a half an inch thick, instruction manual on home teaching.
Really?
Just on home teaching. And it wasn't very big. It wasn't full 8x11 pages.
Yeah.
It was probably your 3x5 cards, but it was, you know, an inch thick.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they would do back in the day was you would go and visit with whoever your home teaching family were. Say, hey, it's the Garby Smith family.
Yeah.
I'm not letting go of the Garby. Did your husband mention anything about that when he listened to the podcast?
No, he hasn't said anything
about
it yet.
Okay, so the Garby Smith family. And then so he would write on the top of this thing, and it was a full-blown form that the church produced at this point.
Uh-huh.
So you'd put Garby Smith at the top. And then you would put along the side who was in attendance when you did the home teaching. And then you would write a note about, like, there would be room for, like, and he would write, Johnny is in the 7th grade and doing the school play, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
You know, and then the next one would be like, little April is just getting her first tooth, and, you know, and it was stuff like that. And then there was a whole thing where at the bottom it was like, what goal did you leave the home teaching family, you know, with? What are you going to follow up on throughout the next month?
Yeah.
And I thought it was awesome because it was months and months of followed up with him on his concern about prayer, worked through it, now working on tithing or.
Okay.
And now.
I have to say something about that, though, because I think that's a really awesome idea, but. I had a friend approach me saying her home teacher, they came into her home and started asking them questions that a bishop would ask them for a temple recommend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, are you attending the temple regularly? Are you reading your scriptures regularly? And I know that that's actually an assignment that some bishops give.
Sure.
Say, when you go home teaching, you need to ask these questions.
Sure.
But she did not like that he was asking those questions.
Sure.
And some of them were, like, temple recommended.
Are you
questions.
Living the law of chastity? Hold on. What kind of home teaching is this?
But she actually said to her home teacher, she's like, I'm not comfortable with this. Like, I'm not comfortable with you asking these questions. So with something, maybe that's why they got rid of that, because there were people saying, I'm not really comfortable with you, like, really prying into our lives. Like,
sure.
We're pretty private people. We don't really want to tell you these things.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I can only imagine that that's probably what it is. But I would hope, I guess my hope is that people understand that a home teacher is this just there to kind of look out for you as another person that can kind of keep an eye on you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean keep an eye like, hey, big brother's keeping an eye on you, making sure you're staying in line. But, you know, if you need anything.
Yeah.
And I think that it's all dissolved if that person is genuinely your friend.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If it's guy who shows up once a month and asks awkward questions, then you're not likely to be like, yes, I am praying, and no, I'm not living the law of chastity.
Yeah.
Like, you probably wouldn't go there. But if it's someone that you know genuinely has the concern for you,
mm-hmm.
then I think that it would be okay to be like, you know what, we're having a hard time with saying our prayers as a family. Or, you know, we really are struggling financially. That's a lot of stuff that I know that, like, if someone came to our house right now, our home teacher, he's a really great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made huge headway with my family in the time that he's been coming. But he's only been coming 6 months.
Yeah.
My wife's pretty private. I'm way open.
Yeah.
I'll tell anyone anything in the world.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if he were to be like, hey, where are you at as far as this goes? I think that if it went any further than, you know, how are you doing with reading the scriptures and saying your prayers? She'd just be like, nope, that is not any of your business.
Right. And she is right. Like,
sure.
If you want to keep things private, you should be allowed to do that. And I think with visiting teaching, that's the point too. I think women will tell other women a lot of things that they're not going to tell their home teacher.
That's true too.
So, like, I think that's a really good purpose of visiting teaching.
So while I've got you here, so I can mark this down for this month, are you guys saying your prayers?
Actually, we're having a really hard time.
And okay, having a hard time. I'm going to write that down right here. Having a hard time in the Garby Smith household.
Hey, by the way, the Garby Smith household has no problem saying our prayers.
Hey, and by the way,
let me just clear that up.
Let me just clear the air real quick here.
My 3-year-old is a praying master.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Great at saying prayers.
No whispering in his ear? He just busts it out?
He just does it himself?
Yeah.
He last night he thanked Heavenly Father for our 2 smoke detectors. True story.
you know what, son? We are thankful for those.
We are, right?
Were they going off during the prayer, the little cricket? No. Oh yeah, thanks for the smoke detectors.
That always go off at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Never in the middle of the day, ever. Nope. Will you hear them just for the first time with the battery out?
Yeah.
That's cool. So what else?
What else does he pray for?
Yeah.
He prays that people can come over to his house.
Like to come and hang out, like play?
Okay. Yeah. And he'll look around his room. He'll say, I'm thankful for my blue dog. I'm thankful for my chalkboard. I'm thankful for my 2 closet doors.
I love lamp.
I love lamp.
Yeah. I'm thankful for lamp.
Yeah, so
that's great.
Yeah, so most of his prayer is just being thankful, and that's good for he's 3.
Yeah,
so
that's good for anyone.
Yeah,
when it's a laundry list of please make this happen.
Yeah,
those
exactly.
Are the prayers I always love, where it's like, you know, that's not how. Okay, go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. He's usually like, please bless that people can come over to my house. He must be like
I
really
play
lonely
tomorrow. Yeah. Please let him. Please let mommy let my friends come over. Please.
That's about all he usually asks for. So
good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, coming up then, we've got Joe Anderson. He's the author of How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat? That's up in the second and the third blocks here of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
We have with us in here in the Cultural Hall, Joseph Anderson. And as I'm looking up on Wikipedia, he was the secretary to the first presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ.
No, not the same guy.
That lived from 1922 to now dead in 1992.
We have a young guy sitting with us right now.
So this is a different Joseph Anderson that's a Mormon. But if you look up Joseph Anderson Mormon, apparently... A little history lesson for everyone. He was a secretary to the first presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from 1922 to 1970, 48 years for those that can't do math that quick, and then was a general authority from 1970 until his death. He was called by Joseph Fielding Smith and then was called to the first quorum of the 70 by Spencer W. Kimball, died March 13th, 1992. But that's not who's here.
No, that is not who's here.
Here in the Cultural Hall with us right now is an author. We're riddled with authors.
Yes.
We had Joanna Brooks a couple weeks ago, but Clinton Joe Anderson Jr., you've written this book, How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat? And then the byline, Perspectives on Abortion, Economics, the Environment, and Harry Reid. Thank you for being here in the Cultural Hall with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, tell us how this came about, because you, Mitch Main, who was on episode 13 and 14, he said, "Hey, you should talk to this guy, Joe Anderson. How do you guys know each other?"
I just called him up. I think I emailed him first, and we've been kind of playing phone tag since. So
called him,
but we've been emailing back and forth since I heard about him.
To try and get on the Cultural Hall, or you wanted to talk to him? Oh, about no, being the bishopric?
Yeah, basically, I was thinking, let's do a How Can You Possibly Be a Gay Mormon? You know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so then How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat is not your first book.
It is my first book.
It is your first book that's ever written? So what are these other books that you've got scattered around the room?
Over here we have How Can You Possibly Be an Anti-Terrorist Muslim by Raheel Raza. That is published. That is on Amazon.
Okay.
And she was on the O'Reilly Factor. She was outspoken against the Ground Zero Mosque.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I thought, wow, this, and she was real articulate and stuff like that. She just thought it was rude, you know, very devout Muslim, you know.
Right.
But she was, I was so impressed that I just called her right up after that and said, can I be your publisher?
And oh, nice.
She kind of said yes.
So these are all books then that you've published, not necessarily.
And then you wrote the foreword to this, How Can You Possibly Be an Anti-Terrorist Muslim? Mm-hmm. And then you published this, How Can You Possibly Be a Muslim Feminist?
That is forthcoming. Everything else is forthcoming that you see.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yes.
So this book in front of me, people won't even be able to purchase yet the How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Republican?
Yep.
This looks pretty worn for a book that's never been...
That's a mock-up.
Okay.
Or I was trying to do an Ezra Taft Benson kind of printed in the 1960s look.
Oh, there you go.
No, it's a mock-up.
You won. You got it.
Yeah, I did my best. Yeah.
So then this book, How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat? Perspectives on Abortion, Economics, the Environment, and Harry Reid. It's available now on Amazon. So
and Deseret Book.
Really?
Yes.
They sell it within Deseret Book?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this then. First off, that raises the question, what do you have to do in order to be approved by Deseret Book? Because not everything written by members of the church or about the church is approved for Deseret Book.
Well, they certainly rejected me at first when I sent them the manuscript. But when I was told by a Mormon Democrat publisher to self-publish, then I said, if a publisher's telling me I should do it, I'll do it. So I ended up doing that and publishing it myself and starting the publishing company. And then I got a distributor, Brigham Distribution, and they've been great. And they are the ones that got me pretty much in contact with Deseret Book. They distribute a ton of stuff.
Like what? Like what are some other things that people might know about?
I saw the Setting the Record Straight series.
Okay.
On their shelves in their warehouse.
And various other books.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then now it's self-published, and then you go back to Deseret Book.
Oh, it was at the Book Buyers Convention in Sandy in August that they introduced me to several booksellers. But you know, the Deseret Book Lady had a few concerns. So, they got me together with her, and I resolved her concerns. So,
oh, nice. What were some of the concerns they had?
Well, just, you know.
The title?
The title, yeah, you know. It sounds rhetorical. We've heard it all. You've grown up in the church, you've heard that phrase.
Yeah. Mormon, and, Democrat. Yeah,
and it's always asked rhetorically, as if you can't be, you know. And I said, I assure you, it's not partisan. It's even though I'm a conservative Republican, but I don't like partisanship, and so I wrote a whole book in defense of Mormon Democrats.
So besides being in defense of Mormon Democrats, what's the book about, or how do you approach it, and what give us the meat of it?
Well, I wish you could read the optional introduction. It's wonderful. In there, I let in a little secret. Of course, I try to bore the author out for about a page so that they skip the optional introduction and move on. and then they'll be reading. First chapter's on abortion. Mm-hmm. And there's the.
Oh, so you start off nice and light.
Yeah. Oh yeah, let's take yeah. right off. We know that's the first the first topic that you know
sure.
people
pro-life,
recite.
Pro-choice.
Yes.
Sure.
Now, I structured it like the book "How Wide the Divide" by Robinson and Blumen. Basically, it's a Mormon and evangelical in conversation.
Okay.
So they take a topic, the Trinity or whatever, and here's the Mormon side, here's the evangelical side, and here's a joint conclusion. I thought, that's a good format. So I did that, and I've got a right and a left and a joint conclusion for each of those topics.
So every chapter of the book, and let me grab this so I can look down the table of contents. So every chapter, and you start with abortion, you go, here is the left kind of way of looking mm-hmm. at abortion. Here is the right, and by right I mean not correct, but I mean the conservative way of looking at it. And then a conclusion where you kind of join.
A joint conclusion. Yeah, just like they did in How Wide the Divide. Of course, if you skip the optional introduction, you're thinking that there's these two guys named Dan and Noah that mm-hmm. are debating, you know, these points, and you don't know that they're both me, you know.
So you go abortion, that's chapter one, and then economics, green politics, politics in the church. What do you think about that as far as politics in the church?
Well, that's a fun chapter. That's my prop. I always say that's the Prop 8 chapter.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It is. It just gives my perspective on Prop 8. Without, in essence, it basically talks about communication.
Okay.
I mean, I have a gay friend, and when the church came out in support of Prop 8, I thought, well, I've got to talk to him now. And so my question was, I supported Prop 8 and voted for it. Are we still friends?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know.
Right.
And I knew we were good enough friends that I knew he would say, sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What was the discussion that he had back in return, though? Because, I mean, that essentially undermines what he probably believes. How did
he just said, this has no bearing on our friendship whatsoever. Actually, I quote what he says in there. You know, he said, put it out of your mind, you know. This is a visiting professor at New York University. He's an agnostic whose favorite movie is Ben-Hur. So I'm thinking, how can you possibly be an agnostic whose favorite movie is Ben-Hur?
His name? Tony?
Who's in Ben-Hur? Give me Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
That's what
I don't know. Masala was pretty. You know,
talk to us a little bit about this then. Why do you think it is so hard for people to believe that a Mormon could be a Democrat?
I grew up in a conservative household, so I made that assumption too. And I think abortion has a little bit to do with it. Certainly, one thing I did in that first chapter is it's not pro-life versus pro-choice. It's pro-life versus pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry Reid's pro-life. So I thought, well, okay, you know. And that makes it much more interesting debate. Because mm-hmm. now they're both pro-life. Well, now what are they going to argue about? Okay, now we can at least do something. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's the same old thing. It's pretty boring. You know,
right.
Pro-life, pro-choice, that's it.
Sure.
But the point is actually to soften up the conservatives. So it does that. In fact, I give a sympathy for the pro-choice in the Democrat pro-life part.
Right.
I give sympathy to that. And by the time they get to there, by the time the conservative gets to that point, he should be open to actually listening and sympathizing with the pro-choice perspective.
So with you being a conservative Republican, did you have to talk to a lot of Democrats, or did you approach this, you said it's basically nonpartisan, but being a conservative Republican, you probably do have a little bit of a bias.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So did you have to have, you know, Democrat friends contribute to this?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yes. Especially the first edition. The first edition was 11 chapters instead of 7. It's out there somewhere on Amazon, but I realized I had to streamline it, so I took out all the George Bush and Iraq stuff, you know.
Right.
And in that, I actually have 4 perspectives, and 2 of them are real people who give their perspectives as well. Because there's the pro-Bush, anti-war, pro-war, anti-Bush,
right,
so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, the real inspiration was I served a mission in Russia. And I came back so conservative. Oh, I was gonna, let the liberals know, huh?
Right.
Look at what communism does.
Communist.
Except, wait a minute. My mission president. He's the most left-wing pinko commie, Democrat who's still a member of the church that I know. And it's okay if I say pinko commie. We call each other that all. He calls me a mercenary SOB. I call him a pinko commie. So okay. You know. But he, a great man, and he knew more about Russian than I did, for crying out loud. He spoke dozens of languages, and at present he is he's a patriarch for the church.
In Russia still, or is he here in the States?
Well,
you don't really know where he is.
Yeah.
that's what that sounded like.
You're gonna
abstain from giving his identity out. Yeah. That's fine. So, what was it about then? If the inspiration for the whole thing came about from serving your mission in Russia, which is kind of an interesting inspiration, what were the experiences that you had in Russia that made you fall in love with the conservative way?
Oh, all Ezra Taft Benson's writings and Cleon Skousen and
be specific. Dive in to a little bit.
There was a wonderful story when. I don't know. Just the customer service there was just appalling. I mean, I was looking for some smetana, which is sour cream, and in the grocery store. And I said, I asked a woman. She was standing right there reading a paper. She worked there. Excuse me, where's the sour cream? She didn't pay attention at first. Where's the sour cream? It's right there. She didn't even look up.
Yeah.
I can't find it. What are you, blind? It's right there. I'm like, boy, I just can't imagine that happening at a grocery store in America, you know. So
all stemmed from bad customer service.
Oh yeah, I guess that was and not only that, but the roads were. When I came back here, it's amazing. It's more culture shock coming back here. The cereal aisle alone just blew me away. I can't believe we have that much cereal
because of all the choices.
I was like, I can't. I really was in awe. And the streets were straight and clean and paved and. Wow, you know, it was just...
And what else about the communist culture that really turned you toward being more conservative?
Oh, I was conservative before that.
It wasn't...
But it definitely. Secured you, it sounds
Oh,
like.
Yeah, it did, but to be honest with myself, I had to remember that, boy, he's a liberal, very liberal. In fact, I've talked to people who ran as Democrats here. I had gone around and talked to people here...
Here in Utah?
Yes, Utah County in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And these people would say... Yeah, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not quite as liberal as he is. You know, I mean, a few people I heard say that, and I'm like, oh, okay. But I got to tell you, the funniest visit I had was with a BYU professor who was quite liberal.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I said, "So you must like Harry Reid," and he goes, "Oh, Harry Reid's way too conservative for me."
Really,
Harry Reid?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And he's a BYU professor.
Yes, this is a BYU professor,
still teaching at BYU.
No, not anymore.
Okay.
But was just as outspoken. Then it is now, but I just rubbed my hands together and said, oh, tell me more. Oh, this is golden.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm looking at this like, what is the interesting story? I don't care about the politics. And he goes, oh yeah, basically he's pro-life, pro-gun, pro-death penalty for one. And I'm like, okay. You know, I didn't, I knew about the pro-life, but the pro-death penalty. Oh, okay. So anyway.
Well, coming back in the third block, we want to talk to you a little bit about the presidential race that's going on right now, not only just amongst the Republicans, but as far as who's going to be able to, you think, take on President Obama the best. We'll talk all about whether or not Mormonism impacts the race, and we'll get into that in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
Back in the third block of the Cultural Hall, Clinton Joe Anderson. I think he just goes by Joe, but print he goes by Clinton. And he's the author of a book that you can get now on Amazon.com. How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat?
And Deseret Book.
And a Deseret Book. Yes. You're right. Let me not discount.
Yes, and various LDS bookstores around, you know, all over.
Possibly Siegel.
Not Siegel yet.
Not no. Siegel. Okay.
No, that's, what that's, is their problem?
That's the big one. You nail down Siegel Book and Tape. You're golden. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about the political climate here in the United States right now. What do you think? Where are we at?
It's interesting.
That's a broad question.
Well, from an LDS perspective, it's really fun, actually. I mean, whether Frommy makes it, it's even more interesting. But for now, at least the buzz is in the air, and people have questions, and people care. About what does it mean to be a Mormon, So,
do you think that Romney's Mormonism will impact whether or not he's able to win, or yes. even to become the nominee? And you just said yes, so that answers that question. How?
The evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think Romney is not conservative enough for the evangelicals?
He's not non-Mormon enough for the evangelicals.
Okay.
Has nothing to do with his politics, but you believe it to be. Just
the fact
mostly,
that he's Mormon,
mostly,
a
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it just. But at the end of the day, there's Obama. But no, they actually even then, a lot of them seem to be so
uptight about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then, let's talk about the political climate now. I mean, you're looking at how the world is now. There are all sorts of just partisan. It's either Republican, it's Democrat. What do people need to do? What do we need to do?
Realize that things are better than they ever have been.
How so?
Really?
Well, actually, there's a good quote by Obama in The Audacity of Hope. I quoted it somewhere, but he said, you know what? When I think about Nelson Mandela and, people getting, Tiananmen Square and the gulags, I'm thinking, getting called names doesn't seem so bad. So, more or less. I mean, things are better. Brian Lamb, the guy who started C-SPAN, he had somebody ask him, what do you think about the polarization? And he said, you know what? I don't think we're as polarized as people think. 100 years ago, we were killing each other over things, maybe 200 years ago. But, I mean, we've gotten more civilized. I mean, there's still backbiting. There's still cheating. There's still mudslinging. But at least, people know the game, and it isn't a matter of, I'm going to kill that guy, like in the Middle Ages or whatever. So we've gotten better. Mm-hmm. We're more civilized than we have been. So at least that's good news.
But yet there's still this stigma about being Mormon and being Democrat. So how do we get past it?
Ah, well, I'll tell you what. Conservatives can, to be self-promoting, conservatives could get past it by reading the book. It shows that, yes, you can be. Because I came from a conservative perspective, I had to write. I didn't just play these two parts. Because at first I started off like that, but it ended up being very kind of shallow and dramatic,
Right.
And I realized, I need to make arguments that I think are really good. So I didn't think I could do the economics chapter, by the way. I thought there's no way I can do a liberal economist, But once you kind of break through, I found all kinds of stuff. And I give it from, some Democrats say, I'm not liberal enough. And I said, well, that's true because I one of the rules for me was that I didn't want to be an idiot. So,
sure.
I'm sorry, I'm not as liberal as some others, but I did take a Democrat position, and I stuck with it, and I made arguments that made sense to me and that I thought were really good, and so they make sense to conservatives. And usually, what happens is people read it. I mean, hardline right wingers will read it, and they just say, this didn't change my mind politically,
right.
But I'm just not near as bitter, and I care a little bit less about politics. And I'm like, you care less about politics? That was what I was going for. All right.
So your point is to just have people not care as much about the whole thing?
I make strong arguments on both sides, so therefore I want to show that there is good reason to care. Okay. Uh-huh. But at the end of the day, it is kind of love thy neighbor as thyself. So, I think I just want to lift the burden of bitterness off people's shoulders. It doesn't mean you still can't participate, but there's far too much bitterness. So,
was there anything that as you're writing, because you said you explore not only the very right conservative end of things, but also the very leftist, very liberal. Was there anything that as you were writing, you kind of went, maybe... Maybe
yes. They have a point.
Have a point.
Yes, absolutely.
What was one of those
things? Since I was able to take Harry Reid's position on abortion, which was pro-life, it was fun. I mean, and I found that there's a bill, for example, that he and Hillary Clinton sponsored that was meant to reduce abortions. But because it gave money to, but people that... were pro-choice themselves, but right. None of the money went to abortions, but it gave money to groups
and organizations.
No Republican voted for it at all. And I kind of thought, we can want to outlaw abortion forever, but what about reducing it in the meantime?
Sure.
And here's a guy who votes pro-life every single time, Harry Reid does, and he was given a hard time when he was first in Congress or the legislature or whatever. But who was it? A liberal feminist Democrat woman came to his defense, McCluskey, I think, and said, "Hey, he's voting his conscience." And since then, they haven't, he's always voted pro-life. So there's something else there. But he's been working to reduce abortions in the meantime. So in essence, I didn't want one side to win. I really wanted a tie, but I'm afraid that on the abortion chapter, the Democrat side, I think won, or at least could teach more. So keep that in mind. Do you want to reduce it as well as outlaw it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and as far as the environment chapter, I'd have to say I didn't move to that. I think my views have broadened as opposed to moderated.
Like as far as global warming.
I did not mention global warming.
You didn't mention it at all.
What part of environment do you get into then? Loss of habitat.
Okay.
Definitely. I mean, I cover Easter Islands, great stuff. Pollution, laws that have, pollution laws in the 1960s have cleaned quite a few things up here. So anyway, at least those two. Habitat reduction was pretty big.
So would you agree then that, how could you possibly be a strict Mormon or a strict Democrat? Because it's my personal belief that even though people will affiliate themselves, obviously, with the church, that there's such varying degrees of Mormonism that I think that there's also such varying degrees of Democratism,
yes.
I guess, and Republicanism.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's ever... I don't think that anyone within the Mormon church is strictly Mormon. You know what I'm saying? I think that they've got one thing that they go, but maybe
absolutely.
Not that. And similarly with political parties.
Oh yeah, there's a variety. I love the stories about leaders in the church disagreeing. The best one is by far Reed Smoot versus the First Presidency. Okay. I used to have that in the book. Like I said, it was twice as long, and I split it into two books. And the second half, I haven't figured out the title for it. But in it, it talks about Reed Smoot. It's Reed Smoot versus the First Presidency, literally. And he's the senator, okay, for Utah.
Okay.
And they're talking about the League of Nations. And, almost everyone on the Quorum of the Twelve in the First Presidency, not everyone, there were two or three exceptions, where it was against it, and it seemed like the church position was they were for it. They're in support of the League of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Reed Smoot in the end just was, I can't. I can't vote. I can't vote against my conscience. And in the end, he didn't support it, and it failed in part because of his vote. But the wonderful lesson there is we have this, obvious political agreement, and in public as well. Well, in the end, there were no repercussions because of this,
Right, because he decided to vote his conscience.
Right.
The church didn't come after him.
Or even other people who were in agreement with him. I think maybe David O. McKay was one of them, but I can't remember. I don't want to say who else was, but these people who were then, appointed to the First Presidency and so on and so forth, there was no kind of repercussions impact that, it was just, hey, we disagreed and now we're time to move on. So that's a great story there.
So your hope, again, just to kind of reiterate what we've already said, your hope is to, with the book, just kind of explain to everyone that maybe politics don't matter as much?
No, I don't want to say that. I want people to, well, when I say care less about politics, okay, it means, you know, your kid might be, want to play ball with you, and you're sitting in there yelling at the TV. Or, well, I used to do that at least.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they're not listening to you when you, you know, but your kid's there. So relax a little bit and realize that God's in charge and just, and there's other things to worry about. There really is.
Right.
If we have the news on all day, where do you see your own life there? The news is right there in front of you with your family around you. So that's kind of what I want. There's no need for so much bitterness. It's, we can disagree and then move on, and that's really what I'm trying to get at. So.
We have a few questions that we ask everyone that comes into the Cultural Hall. The first one being, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I love that. The ward employment specialist.
Oh, and
which I volunteered for, or I asked to be called as a ward employment specialist because I was unemployed. I figured,
yeah.
You figure if there's a way, yeah, to get I'm your like, job, yeah,
yeah, let's get me really close to this, and so, yeah, you know, I ended up showing a lot of people how to, you know get on there, get on the church's website and use LinkedIn and so on and so forth, but I'm still looking for a job myself, so.
Okay, anyway. What kind of job? Maybe we can help you out.
Oh, I'm an engineer. I have a BS in mechanical engineering from ASU in 2001, but I worked in civil engineering. I've been an adjunct professor, and I worked in brain surgery. And I really wish I would have specialized in rocket science in college for that reason.
Wow.
Because then I could take rocket science and brain surgery.
Yeah.
So.
So if you maybe have an offer for Joe Anderson, you can go to the Contact Us tab at theculturalhall.com and get in touch with us there. So though you asked to be the ward employment specialist, let me ask you this. If you could request any calling within the church, what would you do? You can be anything.
I kind of like teaching. Well, actually, I was also teaching a Sunday school for the, 14, 15-year-olds, and I actually like that. I like teaching Elders Quorum, too, so...
Okay.
Yeah. Both of those are fun. Because I'm not a typical teacher. I love asking questions that aren't... I have to remind people, guys, I'm not asking this because I have an answer or because I want the Sunday school answer.
Right.
No, seriously. There, what about this?
Yeah, what about these things?
Okay. And I'll quote Charles Darwin and stuff like that. But to always bring up a different point.
Right.
But I like bringing up the surprising stuff, so.
Okay. Yeah. And then we ask people to climb up on the Ramyumptum is what we call it, to give an opportunity to tell people where they can find you. I know we can find the book in Deseret Book and on Amazon.com. Do you have a Facebook page that people can follow you, or Twitter, or any of those things?
Well, you can go to my, I should have done better at blogging and Facebooking and so forth, but my blog site is howcanyoupossibly.com.
Okay.
You can write to me at possiblyjoe@gmail.com or okay, possiblypublishing@gmail.com. So those are ways to get a hold of me. But I wish I could get someone else to blog for me. I'm just no good at it. I wrote a whole book and didn't have a web presence, and so I decided to copy and paste parts of my book to the blog, and that's how I got away with blogging something. So
okay, and then finally,
there's a Facebook page called How Can You Possibly as well.
Oh, great! So.
And people can just go there and like it. How Can You Possibly?
Yeah, so I go to Amazon and like more. How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat as well? But it's a whole series too. I don't know that we mentioned that.
It's a series where it starts now with How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat, and then moves into...
Yes, other authors have joined my ranks. How Can You Possibly Make a Case Against Teaching by Penn State Professor Larry Spence.
Okay.
In fact, on my YouTube channel, you go to azhobbit.com, azhobbit.com, and that's just my personal YouTube channel. There's a lot of videos I've made there, and one of them is called The Case Against Teaching, and that is a really fun video to watch, and that's what the book is concerning.
Okay.
Rahil Raza is also a Muslim activist. She was on the O'Reilly Factor and because she was against building the mosque at Ground Zero. And I'm her publisher. We've published How Can You Possibly Be an Anti-Terrorist Muslim, only on Amazon for now. And How Can You Possibly Be a Muslim Feminist is coming up soon, which will have works by Margot Badran as well, who's a Georgetown scholar. And How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon Feminist is also in the works. But
who are you visiting with on that?
I actually can't
okay.
say
okay.
at the
all
moment.
Right,
and it'll what, and you'll see when it comes out, you'll
I'm
see
very
why
excited
I can't,
for that one.
Why
okay.
can't why I couldn't say anything. So
okay. And then the final question is what is your favorite part of your faith?
I kind of like that there's a really pinko commie liberal Democrat who was my mission president. I get comfort, actually, knowing that the gospel is broader than politics. I like that. And I was put in contact with a communist from Italy recently by Alan Moberly. He's a great guy. I was at the FAIR conference, and he told me that he heard me say I was a conservative Republican. He saw my book and he just walked off right then. Well, later on a Facebook group of Mormon Democrats, he sent me an email and said, you know, I shouldn't have judged you there. So anyway, he put me in contact with basically a communist. So.
And he's LDS?
Oh, yeah.
He's out in
oh,
Italy.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. He's LDS. Yeah, interesting.
So she is. She.
Okay.
So I thought, but she speaks Italian, so we have to figure out a way to communicate better. But
yeah.
But I just love how the gospel is that broad. It's okay. Really, I mean, communism. How can you be a communist? Well, what's going on here? So,
yeah.
But no, I'm sorry. The gospel is broad enough to have us all in there. So
cool. The name of the book that you can get right now is How Can You Possibly Be a Mormon and a Democrat? Look for other How Can You Possibly titles at howcanyoupossibly.com. And thank you so much for taking some time with us, Joe.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you'll travel home safely.
And if you weren't healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be able to listen to it next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.